Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, today is a bucket list interview. Recently, myself and Justin Whitmell Early sat down and had a conversation with Ronald Rollheiser. Now, if you know anything about my life or Justin's life, you know that this man has impacted both of us in a deep way. And what you're going to hear today is an interview between myself, Justin, and Ronald Rollheiser. We sat down and had an incredibly deep and beautiful conversation that we released on our Intentional Fatherhood podcast this week. And it was such a good conversation, we decided we have got to release it here on the Intentional Parents podcast because it was just that good. And this is your reminder that we actually do have an Intentional Fatherhood podcast. You can listen to that wherever you like to listen to your podcast. But today, our conversation was rich. It was deep. If you know anything about Ronald Rollheiser, he has shaped so much of my life and thinking, and Justin's as well. And even sowing a hidden seed actually came from a quote from him directly. And so much of his work has been fruitful and beautiful in all these different ways that we even get a chance to talk about today. So I just know you're not going to be disappointed. It is fun. It is hilarious. He's 78 and has a sense of humor. What a gift. And he loves Jesus, and you can tell in a deep way. Also, want to let everybody know, if you haven't had a chance to rate, subscribe, and or leave a comment, one of the ways you help us is just by simply doing that. Could you just pause for 10 seconds and do that? It helps us in a huge way. But enjoy today's conversation, and I know you will, with Ronald Rollheiser. Father Ron, welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood podcast. Justin and I could not be more excited to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. Good to be with you.
I'm truly like, this was kind of one of those gifts that we didn't see coming. And we've been so impacted, myself and Justin, by your work and by your ministry. And I'd love to just give you like 2 seconds of what that even means. And so, and Justin, why don't you start? Because I know there's three of us here. There's a dynamic. But Justin, maybe just give a second of how impactful Father Ron's ministry has been to you. And I'll briefly say, then we have just so many questions, so we're going to get right to the good stuff. But I want to briefly highlight this.
I want to do that because, Father Ron, your book, The Domestic Monastery, was incredibly influential to me about 5 years ago. I have 4 young boys. And during the pandemic, I started writing a book on habits and parenting. And I remember, so I'm a practicing corporate lawyer, and I would spend the first hour of my morning working on this book. And I remember thinking, why am I doing this? What do I even know about my parenting? My kids are young. Why am I writing a book about this? But I was reading people and researching, and the domestic monastery was incredibly helpful to me because I kept thinking, I think that what I'm doing in fatherhood is the core of the Lord's spiritual formation for me right now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like all these ordinary tasks are actually extraordinarily spiritual, but I don't know if I'm right about that. And when I read The Domestic Monastery, I just felt this wonderful gift of saying, okay, somebody that I respect thinks like that. That was the beginning of your influence on my thought. And it really changed the way that I wrote. And I tell people, they say, what did you read and to write Habits of the Household? And you're like one of the top 3 books that I recommend. Subsequently, all my friends and I, because we're all fathers around the, you know, in the 30s or early 40s, have now read your book, this, The Sacred Fire. Many of them also Holy Longing. We're very much looking forward to Insane for the Light. I haven't picked that. I know that one's out, but I haven't picked it up yet. But I'll just say your framework for thinking about getting your life together, giving your life away and giving your death away, it was so impactful to our friends that Brooke and I decided we wanted to do a podcast season based around that framework. And so all our listeners now are going to be familiar with you and your concepts of particularly of giving your life away, because we all feel like we're in that stage with kids right now.
And the I'll just briefly say, we recently released a prayer devotional all on a quote from you. And the prayer devotional is called Sowing a Hidden Seed, 31 Days of Prayers for Your a Child's Spiritual Growth. And it comes from a quote that you have, which I'm sure you remember. But it has been such an impactful thing to find someone like yourself and to connect with your work and, you know, your way of thinking and describing life and Jesus has been a gift to so many, including Justin and I, but we are just, we're grateful. We want to give you the floor. So thank you for giving us this space and this time. You did just release a wonderful book, Insane for the Light. I'm already all the way through it. I sent
it to
like,
through it, Brooke?
Yeah, man, of course. Yeah, I couldn't, are you kidding? I was getting that right away. I sent it to all my friends for my birthday. Some people coming out to my birthday. I was like, we're going to be talking about this. So I sent it to them as a pre-read. So, I mean, it's been a gift. So we could go on and on, but I want to talk about this idea, maybe just to set up our first question here, Father Ron, is restlessness. You know, we're talking about these different stage theories, spirituality, all of this. And for us, there's a restlessness that happens in the midlife, especially as we get into the real middle years. But I'd love to talk about how do we process restlessness and what is God trying to teach us about our own desire through this thing of restlessness as fathers and as families.
Okay, well, I'll start first with restlessness first and then later on as fathers.
Yes.
But you know, one of the great kind of one-liners ever in Christian history was written by St. Augustine, where, he begins his spiritual autobiography saying, "You've made us for yourself, Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." That explains everything. Why are we restless? It's not because we're neurotic or whatever. We're built for God. We're built too big for this world. And even though this world is wonderful, you are never, ever going to find completeness here, you know, because we're always looking at a bigger horizon, you know. And, you know, in fact, in almost all my works, that one line underlies it. You've made it for yourself, Lord. Our hearts are restless till they rest in you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a line I used from Karl Rahner that I like. He once got a letter from a friend of his who said, you know, I got married and it's a happy marriage and I would have kids and everything's going well. He said, but somehow there's still something missing in my life. What's wrong with me? And Rahner coined this great line. He says, and only Germans can have tortured language like this. He says, he said, in the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable, you learn that in this life, there is no finished symphony.
Yes.
I mean, nobody gets the finished symphony. And so our restlessness is actually, it's a healthy thing. It keeps us from settling. It keeps us from settling for anything less than second best. Now, how we apply that to fathers, I would need to think about that a little more. I mean, it applies to everybody. But as, for instance, you're both young dads, you know. And I think there, let me tease this out, you know, and Justin, you began by talking about that, you know, that domestic monastery. I think what I'm trying to do, the overall thing of that book is to say, like, your spiritual life is not something separate from your ordinary life.
Yes.
You know, and amen. So that, you know, I begin with a story. I think it's in the book of a friend of mine. He said he belonged to one of these hip prayer groups, you know, where they would meet and I'm doing centering prayer. I'm doing, you know, mindfulness. I'm doing this. And they asked us, what's your practice? What's your practice? My practice is raising my kids. See, that's mindfulness. That's centering prayer. See that?
Those are the bells of the monastery that go off, right?
and that's the essence, the incarnation. Jesus came to be incarnate in human flesh, which means in families. You know, I always say we have more of a domestic God than a monastic God.
Yes.
You know, sometimes we think of they somehow have to be monastic or something. You know, I love the tradition of monasticism. I spent summers with monks.
Yes.
But that's an extraordinary, I don't want to say fringe, but, you know, vocation. That's not for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, as a man, your vocation right now is to be a father, to be a husband, to raise kids. That's your practice.
Yes. Father Ron, can I ask you a question about how you came to write The Domestic Monastery? Because, you know, when I say one of the best books that I've read on parenting was written by a Catholic priest, people are so surprised. You know, they're like, you know, so many authors on parenting, we appreciate people who are in the fray and doing it. And yet you seem to just be able to nail thought on this concept in a way that many people just haven't. What made you want to write it?
You know, one of the major areas I've taught and I've been teaching for 40 years is mysticism and monasticism of John of the Cross, you know, who has a great spiritual genius. But as I'm teaching this, I say, you know, I call it, it's a work of retrieval.
Yes.
He was a monk writing for monks, you know, but the principles are deep, you know. See, so my life's work almost as a theologian is what I call retrieval.
Yes.
Go into like St. Augustine and you bring it out and you realize this isn't just for monks.
Right.
It's for everybody. Yeah. And the principles are, as you see, the principles are wonderful, like the one you just coined, like the monastic bell. So remember, in a monastery, you know, Benedict wrote the rules. He said, a monk's life is ruled by the bell. He said, when the bell rings, you go to the next exercise, not because you want to. It's time. So the time isn't your time. It's God's time, you know. And he has a famous one. He says, if you're writing a letter and you still need to dot a T or an I, he said, when the bell rings, you put the pen down.
Right, right. Mm.
Well, for you as the monastic bell is your alarm clock. Your monastic bell is when you have to show up for work. Your monastic bell is the mortgage payment. Your monastic bell is driving your kids to soccer practice, you know, all this stuff. See, you go not because you want to. It's time.
That's the time of life, you know? And it's not your time, right? It's some. It's time to serve.
Know, the principles are so rich, and they're actually more important for lay people than it is for monks, you know? See, those are principles. He wrote it for monks, but you strip it out.
Yes. You know, I wanted to raise one other topic next to this briefly. Another book that I constantly recommend to people and that was very influential to me was a book called Finding God at Home by Ernest Boyer, who was, I don't know if he ever wrote another book. Father Ron, have you heard of this by chance?
No, I haven't read that.
Okay. I just want everybody, including you, Father Ron, to hear of it because it is not well known. On Amazon, it has 2 reviews, and it was one of the best books that I've ever read because it was a young Catholic dad in the 1980s, I believe, that he thought that he was going to become a monk and go live a pretty, you know, desert sort of life at a European monastery. And then he met a woman, fell in love at seminary. They had children, and he spent years wrestling with did he miss his call? Did he forego his call? And the whole book is about him learning what you just said, and him learning that the subtitle is Family Life as Spiritual Discipline. He's a beautiful writer. It's autobiographical, and I can't believe the man never wrote another book because he just nailed it. Madeline Lingle. And maybe even Frederick Buechner actually endorsed it. Like he must have known people at the time that were spiritual writers of that moment. But it's just not well known, and it's an incredible work. And so I just want everybody listening to go hear it and do this work of retrieval of finding this guy Ernest Boyer's thought, because it really was a great book.
Let me give you a biblical example of that. Especially John's gospel is so rich in its symbolism and so on. And that is the end of John's Gospel, chapter 21, when Jesus calls Peter. And he says, remember, he asked Peter 3 times, do you love me? And Peter says, you know what I love? He said, feed my lambs. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. You know, and of course, he asked him 3 times because Peter denied him 3 times. But when Peter says, you know everything, you know that I love you. Then Jesus says this to him. He says, because you said this, he said, up to now, you've girded your belt and you walk where you wanted to walk. Mm-hmm. But now that you've said this, others will put a belt around you and take you where you'd rather not go.
Yes.
For instance, okay, you're both young fathers. You got married, you have kids. You know what those kids are going to do? They're going to raise you. You're not raising your kids.
Yes, sir. You're raising,
you know, like they're putting a belt around you and they're taking you where you'd rather, which is actually out of unselfishness.
Yes, yes.
You now have to live for other people. You can't just be thinking about yourself, which you could if you were single, you know?
That's right.
See,
that's right.
So commitments, I just love that line. They'll put a belt around you and they'll take you where you'd rather not go. That's what your marriage is doing to you. That's what your kids are doing to you, you know?
Wow.
And it's taking you to the right place, you know? I always say, parents don't raise kids. Kids raise the parents.
Yes.
By the time your kids are old, you've grown up.
You did, yeah.
Oh, I can't tell you how much I have experienced that. I want to maybe not even pivot, but just on the same line. In season two of our podcast, we used the wonderful framework of getting your life together, giving your life away, and giving your death away. And Sacred Fire is about giving your life away, that book that you wrote. And then Insane for the Light, which is the most recent release, is about giving your death away. Now, I know that you're probably above 40 and below 100. I don't know where you're in that mix.
78. But you're
78.
78? Wow. I hope I'm still publishing books at 78.
I need a holding. Okay.
And holding. Well, here's what I want to talk about. Because you are at this stage of life, you're writing from this experience. Would you just be able to kind of take us on a journey? Because I think what helps me and Justin and many men listening and anyone listening really is to have just someone that is in this stage of life of actively practicing giving your death away. And maybe just even give us a clue of where you're at. I know that there's been some just different, from what I understand, health struggles and journey. And that plays into this moment. So would you just give us like a window into what your life really looks like now in this moment as you are trying to practice giving your death away?
Good, Brooke. Let me situate it. Okay, I'm 78. Yeah. No, in the early years of my life in college and priesthood, I was still in many ways sorting life out. Who am I? What am I going to be? So on. Okay. Then you get ordained and you get into ministry. And then we never become completely grown up, but we're essentially grown up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, then you enter that second phase, not so much, how do I get my life together? How do I give my life away? Mm-hmm. Now, I have just finished my 52nd year of teaching and writing and so on, and those were very active years, but now I'm still not retired, I'm still doing work and so on, but it's different, mm-hmm. For instance, I was president of the school. Okay. 5 years ago, I gave up presidency. You step back, all of a sudden, you're nobody. Okay. But, and see, now I'm adjusting to, I'm a cancer survivor. I've been struggling with cancer for more than 10 years. It's come back. I'm doing chemotherapy. All of a sudden, you're looking at not so much, what can I still do? What can I do now so that I end my life well? That I give my life away, my death away? That I die with, in faith, with charity, with humor, with, so that's the spirit you leave behind. See, the way you die, that's the spirit you're going to leave behind. Jesus died in it, very specially. That's the spirit left behind, But if I die in anger and bitterness and say, God, it's hard to be old, that's the spirit I leave behind. If I die in graciousness and letting go. So, Brooke, I'm really in that stage where I'm not fully retired, but I'm in the letting go. In fact, that Christmas song about, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When you get to my age, I'd say, let it go, let it go. Like, you're slipping away. You're marginalized. You're no longer the center of attention. Just basically so that you can step away and do it with charity, with gracious, with peace, with some humor, I always tell people in one of our courses, you have only one moral imperative. You don't want to die an angry, bitter person. You want to die in gratitude.
Wow.
Basically, when you get older, you can slim your spiritual vocabulary down to gratitude and forgiveness. Gratitude, forgiveness. You don't want to die an angry, bitter person.
How do you not die an angry, bitter person in your estimation of that? What does that look like?
You know, I begin, you read the whole thing. I begin with a story.
Yeah.
I once went some years ago with a young guy who was in his about 25. And we went to visit this wonderful elderly priest who was well over 90, but was this mellow, mellow spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're leaving, my young colleague there, Brian, he says to the priest, Leo, when I'm your age, I want to be mellow like you. He said, what's the secret? And Leo said, start now.
Wow. Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
And now you have to let go, try to let go of bitterness, try to be a forgiving person. You know, anger and bitterness, like, don't give yourself the license. Well, I'm young, I can be bitter, I don't know where the country's going, and so on. You can be prophetic and stuff and fighting for things, but mellow.
Wow.
You don't want to die an angry, bitter person.
Wow.
Father Ron, which do you find harder? Because you've lived both. Did you find it harder to start to give your life away? Or have you found it harder to start to give your death away?
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
I think the second part is, they're hard in a different sense. That's a good question, Justin. Like, you know, they're hard in a different sense. You know, giving your life away, as you've discovered as young fathers, all of a sudden you got so many things in your plate and babies and you know, it's hard, but it's different. You have a sense of, you know, there's a good feeling about it.
Yeah, yeah.
The mother gets up to nurse the child. It's hard, but
there's a lot of hope to it. You know that you're raising someone young. Yeah.
Whereas the letting go at the end, that's a little bit different.
Yes.
You know, you're saying goodbye and you're stepping away and you're saying, life is not about me, it's about the young. You know, we just celebrated the Feast of the Three Kings at Christmas time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the deep lessons there is, you know, Luke has that in his gospel. He wants you to compare them to Herod.
Mm-hmm.
See, right. So they hear there's a young king born and the three kings, they say, the magic, we're going to put gifts at the foot of the young. What happens to them afterwards? We don't have to. They're saying, we can die. We have
gifts. Yes.
And Herod, how much of the country? I'm going to kill him.
Yes.
There isn't room for two kings, you know. See, so that the magic said, see, so that in aging, it's kind of, you put your gifts at the foot of the feet of the young and say, I can go away.
You know. Have you read T.S. Eliot's poem, The Gift of the Magi, in a while? Or it always strikes me, I think it ends with the line, and they left looking for another death or yearning for another death, as in something about them resigning their kingship to this new king meant that they were aware that their life had a terminus point, but there was more beyond that horizon. It's a really impactful poem on the subject.
And that wonderful thing from Zechariah, "Now, Lord, you can dismiss your servant."
Yes, depart in peace, yeah.
I have to look at young people and say, I can pass away. I've had my time. You know, it's their world. Pray for them, but that's not easy. You know, see, being a young father, it's hard in a different way, but there's emotional payoffs and so on. Stepping away to death, you don't have that emotional payoff. It's like, you know, I'm going to disappear so to make room for you people. You got to work at that.
Yeah. But you've given us such, I mean, truly, one of my favorite things about what you're doing. And I mean, I know Justin and I are hoping in time too, is just to be able to take all the things that other folks like yourself have given and passed that along. And I think you're doing such a masterful job of collecting these conversations, these writings, these words, and all this space to give us even right now, a generation of fathers some framework to understand the chaos which is coming home tonight at dinner, right? Like when we get home tonight, it's like, okay, oh, that's right, I'm giving my life away. Oh, this does feel a little bit like death because there's a version of it that is death, right?
Yeah. You know, that makes me think, Father Ron, when we did the podcast series this fall about getting your life together, giving your life away, and giving your death away, I think in around the end of the episode, or maybe in episode two, I can't remember, we started intertwining it with your work and talking about where it came from. I had a couple listeners who maybe were just halfway into the first session, text me or email me, and they said, "Wait, this is Father Rollheiser's framework." Some of them said, "Do you credit him?" And I was like, "Keep listening, yes." but you mentioned your life has been a work of retrieval, and I'm curious, at what point did you distill a lot of your thinking into this framework, and were you reaching back? Were versions of this framework used by other authors that you had read? What influenced it?
You know, I came to that slowly, Justin. It wasn't, you know, and that, I mean, as an academic, my writing is a work of retrieval a lot.
Right.
You know, I came to it because, first of all, I trained as a systematic theologian. I was teaching courses and, you know, and then in 1976, and I don't know, it's divine providence why I even took this course. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I had never had an interest in mystics. You know, because I tried to read him as a young person, you know. And then I read a book by Langdon Gilkey, who was a Presbyterian, University of Chicago, called Naming the Whirlwind. And it was just fascinating. He says, you know, our culture is going through a dark night of the soul. That's a culture, you know. And so I thought about it. So I read about this research course, University of San Francisco, 6 weeks, reached the John of the Cross. So I went and took it, changed my life, changed my thinking, you know. And it was a fabulous professor, Michael Buckley, but he led us through that. And all of a sudden I realized, this is what I want to do. You know, this is not about a 16th century mystic. You know, you know the whole John of the Cross, I get that framework. Try to get your life together. Except he has different John. He calls that the dark night of the senses.
Okay.
Give your life away as proficiency. Give your death away as dark night of the spirit. And I thought, people need to know this.
Okay.
And then I brought systematics for another probably 12 or 15 years, and finally I realized, I don't want to do this. I want to teach spirituality. You know, like, you know, I find systematics dry. And so I just kept shifting till finally, I don't teach systematics. Right. Not because it isn't good. It's important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I give you my own thing on that. You know, we say like, you know, systematic theology and spirituality, a game. Take soccer. Systematic theology are the rules for the game.
Mm-hmm.
Spirituality is the game.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Like all your doctrine stuff, they're very important. They're the rules. Mm. But what you're doing now, that's the game. How do you live that out inside those rules? You
know? And the enjoyment comes in playing.
Yeah. And maybe on that life lived experience, maybe a kind of parenting based question for all of us and all listening for parents especially. But one question I know I just jotted down because I was really curious, how do we practice this idea of surrender, you know, because that's part of this, without drifting into passivity and responsibility, without slipping into control? Like, how do we do that, practicing that surrender without passivity and responsibility, but without being hyper-controlled? Would you have any thoughts on that?
Excellent. I'm gonna begin here with scripture. And it's Jesus on the cross in Mark's gospel. And there's just a great line we need to just massage and live. They said, on the cross, at a certain point, said, Jesus bowed his head and gave over his spirit. You know, the difference between giving it over and resignation. You know, see, we can resign and it'll be passive. The playground bully has you pinned. Say, uncle, or I'll break your neck. You know, you say, I can say, uncle. That's resignation, or it's just despair in life. My life means nothing, so I don't care. You know, that's resignation. See, giving over is something, it's proactive. Say, like Jesus said, nobody takes my life from me. I give it over. When my Pilate says, you know, I could kill you or set you free. I have power. Jesus said, you have no power whatsoever. I gave my life to the Father. you can't take from me by conscription what I gave over freely. See, so the key thing is, if you're giving it over, it won't be passive. Mm. See, resignation, despair, giving up, that leads to passivity. Mm. You know, see, as fathers, again, back then, you're giving your life over for your kids, for your family. You're giving it over.
Yes.
Mm. See, then it's not passive, you know. But just that one line explains, which is, he bowed his head and he gave over his spirit.
Mm. Yes.
He didn't despair and say, well, it's fucked. Nothing I can do. I want to die. You know?
Yeah.
Said, I want to give my last act. I want to give it over out of love.
How would you contextualize that for the restlessness of our generation right now? And particularly maybe even the younger generation under us. I sense a spirit of, if you're not mad about something, if you're not angry about something, you know, you can look at this from left or right. So don't take me as signaling either. If you're not mad about, you know, something going on in the administration or the culture or the policies, then you're not really living. You're not really a Christian, or you're not really moral. How would you counsel somebody like that who wants to keep the fire and seeks justice and longs for something more to handle it in a way that is more Christ-like and has that holy passivity in it?
Yeah, good question. And I want to answer it in the abstract, and I want to try to answer it practically. You know, and just the answer, you need to come out of Jesus and not of ideology. You don't want to, I got to be angry about something. That's ideologically driven, either from the left or from the right. You know, I'm mad or I'm woke and I'm mad about something and so on. Mm-hmm. Then oftentimes people try to cloak that with Jesus when Jesus, I've come to sow fire on the earth.
Right.
You missed
right.
that completely. The fire of Jesus is the fire of love, mm-hmm. not of division, you know. See, so mm-hmm. And let me give you an example of what I mean by Jesus or ideology. I was listening to a radio podcast one day, and this woman thinks she's an Episcopalian or minister out of San Francisco who's done a lot of work on ecology, earth saving, you know. And,
okay.
And so I was pretty liberal. And so the announcer said to her, he said, you know, you live in liberal San Francisco, you know, and that gig goes over there. How does that gig go over if you're in Arkansas or West Texas? She had a good answer. She says, I've learned this, speaker said. If I come out of Jesus and the gospel, sincere people hear me. If I come out of ideology, they turn me off like a water faucet, which is so true. You know, if you're coming out of Greenpeace or you're coming out of woke or you come out of MAGA, it's an ideology. And it's not going to go anywhere. That's not prophetic anger, you know. Jesus could get angry, but it's so important. It's got to come out of Jesus.
Yes.
It's got to come out of the gospel, you know. And that is even in our criticism. You don't say, well, I hate Trump or I hate this or whatever. You say, like, well, this goes against the gospel. That goes against the gospel, you know. And then also, the second thing, in our anger, we always have to be gracious and respectful, you know. See, I think sometimes we give ourselves permission, because I'm angry, it's important. I can disrespect you. I can call you an idiot. You know, no, mm-hmm. you can't. You may not, you know. You know, and in that anger, Justin, what bothers me is, you know, civil discourse is broken down. We yes. call each other idiots and dumb and stupid and, you know, we're not going to get together with that kind of civil discourse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, just basic, you know, basic respect for each other, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think
that's an ideology.
Yes. You know,
it's like a fad. I got to be angry at somebody. I got to be.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, the richness of Jesus's life is that it provides us with so many examples of how to live. He turns tables, and yet he also opens his hands on the cross. But I think people like me, at least, we get really confused about which one are we doing at the right time. How would you counsel the young to decide what are the narrow circumstances under which it's time to be like Jesus and turn over tables? And what is the thrust of the rest of life when you're like him and opening your hands to be hung on the cross?
That's a good question.
And I don't know. Like, I genuinely, can you help, Father Ron?
This is a counseling session. We need you here.
Well, let me start just by talking about Jesus turning over the tables.
Yeah.
That is a very misunderstood text in Scripture.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we always think Jesus turned over the tables because then the money changers were cheating and you shouldn't have that and so on. No. Jesus would have no problem with your church having a Starbucks there. You know, that's not what this is about. See, who are the money changers? Notice the expression money changers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this. Outside the temple, people came from all over the world there. But to buy stuff, to worship at the temple, they had to change their currency into Jewish currency. So if you came from Greek, you had to turn your Greek currency into Jewish currency before you could go into the temple. See, now that's a deep thing. What Jesus is saying with that is they were sitting between people and access to the temple, which means access to God.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus is saying, anybody who is blocking access to God, I'm kicking over the table. And incidentally, that single thing led to his death. You know, because it actually had Jewish currency.
Right.
You know, see, you know, when you remember in Scripture where the Samaritan woman, she says to Jesus, like, says, you know, I'm a Samaritan. And the Jew says, you have to worship in Jerusalem. The Samaritan says, you have to worship in Mount Gerizim, which is the real temple. And he said, neither. The temple is your heart.
Right, right,
see,
right.
See, Jesus, nothing sits between you and God. And if some church figure, you know, gets between you and God, they're going to be overturned. I remember hearing a strong talk once from Andrew Greeley in Los Angeles. He said, you know what Jesus went up to church? He said, he'd go into most of our parish offices and staff and kick over the table and said, you're getting in the way, you know. You want your kid baptized, they go through me. You want this.
Yeah.
So he said, that's the new money changers.
Yeah.
It's well, okay. Like Starbucks in a church, you know.
Right. Yeah. And quick follow-up on that. So do you see that story more as demonstrating who Jesus is? You know, he removes barriers to the people and their access to God. Or do you see it also as prescriptive for Christian action? Turn over tables if people are getting in the way.
Yeah, it's the first, but it's a little bit, you know, as Christians, we have to, when we see people or churches or ministers or priests sitting between people and their access to God, we have to protest them, say, no, you can't do this, you know.
So you do see it as prescriptive under those circumstances.
It is prescriptive. Good. Yeah, okay. It's like all of Scripture, you know. Remember, was Bonhoeffer coined this great line. He said, "Jesus wants followers, not admirers."
Yes.
He's not saying, "Well, wasn't he wonderful?" He's, "No, I want you to do that." You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, then I want to expand this a little bit, and I'm sure you have a question after this, Brooke. But sorry for jumping in one more time.
Oh, you're
good. I think one of the great struggles of people in our stage of life, fatherhood, in the giving life away stage, is suddenly being angry about everything. And it ties into, you know, looking at Jesus' anger in the temple. Father Ron, I never regarded myself as an angry person. I never struggled with anger until I had children. And I was led around by the leash and told, and they started raising me. And I was told now at the time, I didn't know it at the time, but you know, now's the season for giving your life away. And anger's become a live struggle in my life, you know, just being mad that things are the way they are.
Mm.
And this is just so normative for fathers our age. I talk to so many people like me who, they don't know where their anger has come from, at their spouse, at their kids. And it's just, it's now a dominant feature of their life and it never was a feature before.
Mm.
How would you counsel us?
Couple of things. First of all, I'd say, to name it. You just name it. That's the first stage. The first thing, you have to name it. You say, like, I'm struggling with anger. You know, if you deny that, it's going to snake bite you. Then secondly, give yourself permission to feel it. Like, don't pretend to say, well, no, I'm not an angry person.
I've had people with
clenched fists saying, I've never been angry. your body and stuff doesn't like it. Name it. Give yourself permission. And then, you know, find safe places to unload it. You know what I mean by that is, you know, see, as a father, as a Christian, you're going to have to carry some tension for a lot of things. You know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so And sometimes you're going to get angry, get frustrated, and so on. And the key thing is, don't give it back to the people you're carrying it for.
Yes.
See,
yes.
You need to unload it. And safe places, that's this. You know, when you're just frustrated, you want to kill someone, get together with a couple of buddies and maybe have a drink of scotch and say, I want to shoot somebody. You know?
This is my kind of prescription, Father Ron. This sounds like a holy time.
There's going to be a mass shooting and I'm going to be the shooter, you know.
Yeah,
see, that's a safe place to unload it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it gets rid of tension. But then you have to get rid of tension. It can cause cancer, causes high blood pressure, and so on. Mm. And you work with it, but give yourself permission to feel it. And as long as you can name it, you're healthy.
That's good.
It's when you stop it. Oh. I'm not an angry person.
That's good.
I have a right to be angry, so that's not healthy.
Yeah. That's good. And I just, maybe for listeners, I have found the three things in my life that have really started to help with this are, or physically move my body, because there's a metabolic effect of anger. Mm-hmm. Second, move my mind. When I journal about what I'm mad about, I feel like I'm giving it to the Lord. It's my way of praying. I would say prayer, but specifically for me, it's journaling it out. And then in close friendships, particularly my friendships with my two best friends here in Richmond, Steve and Matt, just name, like what you said, naming it to them and saying, I'm so mad. And, you know, I will say that those things have helped me tremendously. And for anybody listening, I think don't just throw weights around in the gym. You need to pray, but don't just talk to God about it. I think the word of Christ is truer in the mouth of our brothers. That's another Bonhoeffer quote. And we need to hear us, and we need to hear it back from them. Wonderful answer. That was just my little tidbit to the listeners.
As long as you can name it, you know, you're going to be healthy. Mm.
Yes.
And with intimacy, where you can also release some frustrations. I want to shoot somebody, and so
on. Yeah, but you're that's what we talk about a lot. Is this
murderous thoughts? That's good enough, you know. Mass shooting, you know.
Well, I mean, it's such a true emotion of just that rage that can take over at times. You know, in our time, you know, we could talk to you for a very long time, but with all the content you're still putting in the world, we're going to let you go. But I just want to ask just a kind of a closing question, if I could. And that is, you know, you have 78 years on this earth. You have so much experience that you have gathered and collected and given your life to, and literally now giving it away. If there's just anything that you would want to leave us with, Father Ron, myself, Justin, but the families, and there's many moms listening right now too. So to the families listening, what's a piece of encouragement and or just anything that you would just want to deposit into those that are listening? We'd love to know.
Okay, and in fact, I'll do it. It's a piece I have in Domestic Monastery, you know. And, you know, it's a line in monasticism that can sound so silly, where they write it, every time you leave your room, you come back less a man, you know. Mm-hmm. But, but they're talking about your commitment. Stay in your commitment. Stay with your marriage. Stay with your church. And it's going to, remember they said, your cell is going to teach you everything you need to know.
Yes.
You know? I love that.
You can study theology and study spirituality, but life is going to, if you're an honest father, you're an honest mother, you're an honest husband, so on, that's going to teach you. That's going to teach you what you need to know. That's going to bring you to God.
Wow.
That's the rope. Put the rope on you, you're going to lead you with. So basically, I can put in one, fidelity. Just be faithful, be faithful, be faithful. Even when it doesn't, when it's dry, when it's empty, you know, the great prayer, you know what, the one rule for prayer, show up. Just show up, no matter how you feel.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
Just be there. So just the word, just Brock, fidelity.
Yeah.
Be faithful, it'll take you where you need to go.
You know, I have to mention this. This seems providential to me. This morning, I was writing in my journal and I just pulled it up. It started with finally caught up on sleep, because for the past 2 days, these new puppies that we bought our boys have been keeping me up all night. And it feels like the new leash. It's like suddenly I'm up all the night. And I just, talking about anger, the past 2 days, Father Ron, I've just been steaming. Like, you know, it's all up to me and all these things are happening. And I was blessed with a good night's sleep. And I was journaling this morning after reading in Galatians about the fruit of the Spirit. And I just paused. I said, Lord, speak to me. Anything I need to hear here, speak to me. And then I'm just going to read the journal. I had a sense that the Spirit was saying, keep on. Keep doing the things that you're doing. Mm. Faithfulness, I guess. Do the things. I think years ago in my life, I would have read that sentence and thought, well, that sounds extraordinarily legalistic. Just do the things. That's what. But I think listening to the Spirit this morning and reading about the fruit of the Spirit, faithfulness, and probably, Father Ron, the echo of your writings in my head, I think of in Sacred Fire, this stand in the place, stay there, the story that you tell about one of your relatives that was killed, I believe, right? That or the idea of, don't leave the cell, stay there, yep. Keep doing the work. I think it really has, your writing and the Spirit working in your writing has really helped me think like that faithfulness, staying, doing the work, committing, don't leave, be there for your wife, stay there for your kids, has encouraged me so much to realize, okay, this the Lord is saying, show up, be faithful. It is through that I am forming you to be more like Jesus. And what else is better than that?
Yes, sir.
Very much, sir.
And
don't be intimidated if people say, well, then you're just going through the motions. You don't feel, no. Can I use a colorful expression here?
Please.
We love those, actually.
Okay. Yeah, we do.
Any love, who's this colorful spiritual writer out of San Francisco.
She's wonderful.
She tells a story about her son. She said, I virtually raised this kid in church. Mm-hmm. Since then he gets to be 15 years old. He says, Mom, I don't want to go to church anymore. She said, when? I said, it doesn't mean anything to me. So what do you think? She said to him, said, I couldn't give a shit whether it means anything to you. She says, that's a child's answer. She said, it means something in itself. She said, it's like visiting your grandmother. You don't visit. It doesn't have to mean anything. She said, these things mean something in themselves. Mm-hmm. So when you go to church and suddenly you take your kids to soccer practice, it doesn't have to mean anything to you. It means something. And in fact, that's the definition of maturity. See, when we're immature, it's what does it mean to me? What do we get out of it?
Yes.
When you're mature, say, what does this mean? Period.
Good.
Yeah.
And you don't go to church on Sunday always because it means something. Sometimes you're going to be bored, sick, and tired. You're there.
Yes.
You're visiting
your mother. And then it changes you, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the wisdom of what you just said and from lived experience is just such a gift to remember that faithfulness piece and everything. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm just loving soaking all of this in. Father Ron, I just want to say thank you so much. Justin and I are so grateful to just get a moment with you. Your work has been so encouraging and inspiring. Keep doing the work. If we could just say, as two men, not trying to fluff you up or make you to feel something different, your work is meaningful. It is making a change in so many people's lives. You don't see it. And way beyond your life here lived, it is going to bless generations. And we say thank you for depositing that.
And I want to say this to you. I'm old and I'm pastor. You are the young people. You got to carry this on. So you keep doing the work you're doing. Keep doing the work I'm doing until I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you're young. You're young. Mm. It's just great to hear young voices speaking at this depth.
I have so many friends in my life whose life you have changed, Father Ron.
Yeah.
And to hear you say to us, because I don't just hear it to me, I hear you saying it to us.
Yes.
Keep doing it. It is heard and we will. And thank you.
Yes.
Thanks. And Brock, I forgive you the Tennessee cap.
Yeah, it was a design thing, I didn't even know what the team was. I just liked the hat. Yeah. And truth be told, I've made a poor choice, so I'm going to need your forgiveness on this.
You couldn't get an Indianapolis hat right now.
I'm going to get one. Well, I'm going to get one for you too. So just
there
wait.
You go, there you go.
We'll get you an address. Next interview, we'll have you wearing it. Hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your time, Father Ron.
Thank you. Well, then, blessings on your work. Like I said.
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.